Accession number 27460, reel 17.
Mr. Wilkes, reel 17. You wanted to correct an item that you had mentioned in the previous tape.
Yes, that is correct. On reflection, I remembered that after the attack by the fighting patrol, our colonel was relieved of his command, and the second in command was promoted to lieutenant colonel and took command. I thought he'd been a battery commander when I first mentioned it, but I was incorrect in that. And
so you're now in this second position, isn't it, up on the hill that you were
yes,
talking about?
Yes, my dugout was on top of the hill, yes, and we were susceptible to patrols coming past. I was told to keep my small squad quiet if we heard anything, and if we suspected they were Japanese, do not attack them, just keep quiet. But nothing happened.
What was the... could you see for any distance in the position you were in?
Where we were, we could look down into our own headquarters position, which was in the bottom of the hill, and there was a little ravine that went down into the cookhouse, where the cookhouse was situated. And the rest were sort of scattered amongst all the thick jungle shrubbery.
And towards the enemy's position, or wherever they were, could you see any distance?
To be
there?
Perfectly honest, I was disorientated. I couldn't say. Of course, we were of the impression that the enemy were just about everywhere around us.
The men that you had with you, were they on the maintenance side, or were they...
Oh, no. No, I didn't have another maintenance person with me. They were all... office people or admin, something to do with regimental headquarters.
You held this position there, as I say, on the hilltop.
I had four men with me on there. Just, I suppose, if the Japanese had come along and stumbled upon us, it would have alerted everyone that they were in the area. But we were also told that it was a route that was used by our own patrols along there, so keep your guns out of the way.
Was that position the boundary between yourselves and
the
enemy position?
I don't really think it was, but I think it was a route that the Japanese could use.
Could you take me through the routine of the day, of a day, that when you're on there, starting, to say, from whatever valley it was?
Stand two was at first light.
What did that entail?
Well, all the men had to be up and ready, and we just stayed there and waited until the appointed time of stand down, providing nothing happened, and it never did. So we were very fortunate in that respect. So we tidied our dugout up and then would make our way down to the cookhouse and see about some breakfast. We weren't in that position many days. I know we moved out. I took ill, I think, on the fourth day we were in action. I went down with dysentery and we'd moved to another position then. And when the medical officer came up, I reluctantly reported to him because I didn't want to appear to be trying to get a way out. But anyway, the medical officer was an understanding person, and I pointed out to him I didn't want to go back down the line, but I was reporting sick if he could give me some treatment. And he made a bargain with me. He said, providing my temperature wasn't over 101, I could remain, but he said, if it's over, you'll have to go, and it turned out to be 104. So I was immediately evacuated and spent that night in an advanced dressing station.
What were the symptoms of your illness? What were you actually suffering from? Terrible. Other than the name of the disease.
The pains in the stomach were terrible. And trying to go to the toilet, it just seemed as though it had been a waste of time. Past a drop of blood or something like that, and that would be it. And felt horrible.
And how far was the advanced dressing station from the position you were in?
Not far, just maybe a quarter of a mile, something like that.
And what was the situation there? How was it made up?
Now then, I only saw orderlies in that. I didn't see an MO. I was to spend the night there, and I would be evacuated the following morning. But the staff were terribly jittery because they told us how true it was, but the Japs had overrun an advanced dressing station and butchered all the casualties, either the previous night or two or three nights previously. And so the staff were all on edge all the time, and so I think they were just glad to get us out of the way the following morning. Now, that was a journey. They would evacuate us. The roads were so bad that an amphibious duck was brought, if you've ever heard of those. And we were on stretchers. And where I said to those that were carrying me, I said, I can climb up there. And they said, but you won't. And they lifted the stretcher with me on it up, and the stretchers were laid crossover. I think there were five or six of us laid crossover on this duck. The journey was going to take so long that a big army flask of tea was provided, and the 22 miles down to a position near to our B echelon took about 4 hours. The chap that was the attendant, along with the driver, told us that if we'd been battle casualties, they'd have taken us down the river because it was smoother. But they took us by road, and it wasn't too pleasant.
The effect of... could you drink and eat with the illness? Or did it have bad effects?
You needed to eat, you felt you wanted to eat, and when your food was put in front of you, you felt as though you wanted to reject it. Felt sickly all the time.
But was this a hospital it took you to?
Oh, yes, it was there were two big casualty clearing stations, one on each side of the road. Now then, they had been told to stand by for 1,000 casualties a day because we were going to put in a very big attack. And I had been looking forward to witnessing this artillery barrage. Our guns had each been issued with 400 rounds per day for a 3-day battle. It never came to that, and nothing like 1,000 casualties either. But it was a tented hospital, a great big marquee, and were laid on stretchers, but the sides of the marquee were rolled up. And from where my stretcher was placed, I was looking out down the side, and there were two tents. One was a smaller marquee, which was the operating theatre, and we could see ambulances coming in all the time, four at a time, with casualties. And I'm just glad it wasn't more casualties, but they were just pulling up there, and it was swift before they were being taken to the wards or wherever. Now, the other tent, it was what was classed as a 180-pounder, and that was a ridge tent, and it was surrounded with very heavy barbed wire entanglement, and that was housing Japanese prisoners of war who were wounded and guarded by Gurkhas.
And were there any, to your knowledge?
Any?
Any prisoners of war in there, to your knowledge?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, there were some. And the Gurkhas were keeping a strict watch on them.
And the treatment that they gave you, what was that?
I cannot remember, but I know that every time I went to the toilet, they had to have a sample of my stool. I had to put my name on it and everything. And very embarrassing, but never mind.
What was the toilet situation?
Well, just behind the screens, sort of.
What I mean, was it a hole or what?
Well, there was a hole, yes, and we had some. I think there were paper papier-mâché containers that we had to put our deposits in.
Well, that was quite something.
Yes.
The staff of the hospital, who was staffing it?
Both Indian and British. It was British doctors that saw us. But it was Indian troops who were looking after the stores department, because I'd had to bring my kit back down there with me. And when we'd gone into action, I'd taken about a year's supply of soap, toothpaste and things like that. When I collected my kit bag, it was empty. If I could have found the person, I'd have shot him.
Was it all male establishment?
No, there were female sisters, but none actually came on the ward where I was. They were just orderlies. I think they would be mainly used for the battle casualties.
Was the food an improvement to what you were getting in the line?
Well, I don't really think so.
What was the food that you were getting? Was it the typical British food, the British Army food whilst you were in Burma?
At that stage, yes. We were getting some soya sausages. Those were a predominant feature of the food. And then corned beef, of course. But we didn't get any... I can't remember getting any fresh meat at the hospital, but I know while we were in our positions in action, we did get some fresh meat. Our quartermaster saw to that. He was a ruthless fellow.
Do you remember his name?
Bills. Yes. Now, he was a tough character. He was from the Manchester area. Both he and his brother were in the regiment. They both were boxers, and they wouldn't believe anyone hadn't run to school with a slice of jam and bread in their hands. He was a crude man, but give him credit for something. He had attained the rank of quartermaster sergeant, and he each day used to get his dictionary and look at a word that he'd heard used, find it, and find out the meaning, and try and use it as many times as possible during the next day.
You mean quite a character.
He was more than that, because later on, when our lieutenant quartermaster died, he eventually took over, and another chap and I had to go to his dugout. He was in line to be promoted to lieutenant quartermaster, and he didn't even know how to hold a knife and fork. And he asked for some guidance on table manners.
But essentially, most of the food you got was British-style food. You weren't into Indian foods the line situation.
No. If we didn't get British food, it was invariably just hardtack. Pilchards or corned beef.
Was the hospital a strictly disciplined area, both for patients and people who were running it?
From memory, I would say pretty well disciplined. It can't have been too well disciplined, or I wouldn't have lost all my personal belongings.
How long were you there?
Possibly 3 days, as I was begging to go back to my regiment.
What were they giving you for your complaint?
I cannot remember. I know that it might have been the same treatment. I know later on, because I had several attacks of dysentery during the campaign, and we used to get some tablets called sulfaguanidine. And originally, when we first started getting them with the regiment, our MO used to prescribe 12 at a time, and there were huge things about the size of a polo mint. And we had to take them with the water. He did reduce that to 10, which eased the situation.
So after the 3 or 4 days, you would obviously go back to the unit.
Yes.
Had they moved?
Had the regiment moved? I'm just trying to think. Yes, we had. Yes, we'd moved to a position close to the Razabul fortress. No, we'd moved to another position. Another position. But it was, I think, from there. No, it was while I was still in the previous position. I think that our colonel was very concerned because there was a hill, and if my memory serves me right, it was number 1301, and at the top of that hill was a Japanese bunker, well dug in, and they'd lost one or two dive bombers trying to oust them. They tried frontal attacks, they tried artillery barrages, and nothing had got these Japanese out. And yet, the position was so, had been so well chosen. They had a very wide arc out of a very narrow bunker, narrow horizontally. And our colonel had been two or three times to see divisional and corps HQ to get permission to take two guns forward. He thought we could shoot them out. And I think it was from the position where I was sent sick that he reconnoitred a route for these guns and got permission on the third attempt. This was interesting because it was a highly dangerous way, because from this Japanese observation post they were watching everything we did, and they had artillery that was in command at a moment's notice. So our colonel, he got two gun tractors and two guns. Initially he'd wanted volunteers, but the gun crews just didn't want to go. They wanted their own guns and they wanted their own teams. They worked as a team and they knew each other. And so the colonel took them along the track so far to where there was a deep depression, and he stopped them in the depression. And then he took the sergeant of each gun and the number one driver from each tractor, and they walked along the track a bit further to a point where they could really see this Japanese bunker. And he pointed it out to these men, and he said what he wanted. He wanted the tractors to pull the guns in quickly, unhitch, everything to be done in record time, which had been well rehearsed many and many a time. Pull in, unhitch, unload ammunition. And he told the numbers one sergeants of each gun, "I'll give you 50 rounds apiece at that bunker, and we hitch up and pull out sharp." So this was accomplished. The third shell from one of the guns hit the bunker, direct hit. The Gurkhas were there ready to go in. There was nothing to find. Been completely demolished.
And this happened before you'd rejoined?
No, it happened after I rejoined them. And our adjutant was explaining it to us that night, what had happened. And we were all delighted and full of praise for our gunners.
So at this point in time, wherever you were, that you were still able to get vehicles to move along the tracks?
And they were just tracks.
But you could use your vehicles as transferring onto mules or something?
That's right. No, we didn't do that.
So on a morning, again in general terms, you would get up to go to breakfast, etc. What kind of daytime duties were you doing yourself?
My first duty, it wasn't given to me, it was just a self-appointed duty. I went round each vehicle that was in the forward area and checked up with the drivers that each vehicle was okay, whether it needed anything done. If it didn't, I had a list of all the vehicles, and I used to carry out the major inspections. I'd try and do one a day. Sometimes it would take 2 days if we're involved in a move or something like that. But I worked on the premise that if I prevented any breakdowns, I wouldn't have to deal with any. And this worked exceptionally well.
What was the main problem with the vehicles? I know you mentioned water in the fuel, but other than that, it's a pretty tough terrain.
Yes. We did... Down on the Arakan, it wasn't so bad. The main thing, we used to get a bit of barbed wire wrapped around the propeller shafts, and that was to cut off, and used to get entangled, and that was... Sometimes oil seals used to get destroyed by that. But I would keep the vehicle running until I could get the necessary parts in those circumstances.
And if you'd run short of a given part, how did you get it? How were you able to get it?
Well, I would go to the quartermaster in the first place and tell him, and then he would contact our light aid detachment, which was back at B Echelon. If they held the part, it came up with the supplies the next day, or that day, whichever. If they didn't, then they had to send further afield. But I never left a vehicle at any time.
Could you move about relatively freely in daytime?
Where we were, yes. It wasn't so bad. We could cope. And... Well, from memory, I can only remember one day when I took the second in command along to a forward position and got mortared.
So you'd come under fire, and you were now aware, presumably getting used to this kind of thing. Did you have thoughts that something might happen to you?
It was always at the back of one's mind, but I think, with hindsight, I think I had a positive attitude. I thought, well, if it happens, it'll happen, but I'm determined that it won't.
Did religion play a part in your...
Yes.
Your thoughts on
yes,
that?
Yes, oh yes.
And were you able to still have your church services in this position on a Sunday?
No, but we did get services, and we had an excellent padre at the time, wonderful person, Padre Hart, and he did used to have little services and before, but he did administer. He used to go back down the line and come back up, and if there was a bit of a service, yes, we'd attend if we could.
And presumably he would visit you in your positions more than actually gather you together?
Not really. I think he was just there for anyone to go and talk to at any time.
You've mentioned having dysentery. How did you get on with the creepy crawlies of the place? You've got your mosquitoes and other animal or
accepting life. Snakes, everything. I know in our first position, where we'd been attacked, we'd gone back to there. We'd left the hillside position and gone back to that position, and we're sitting on the top of the sandbags around our dugout, which was the norm at night. We used to watch the sun go down, and we used to time it. When the sun hit the horizon, it used to be 20 minutes till it disappeared. And we used to just be talking softly, or on this particular occasion, we're just singing softly, eight of us. And the chap next to me, we were just sitting swinging our legs. Yes, we were sitting there swinging our legs, singing softly. And the chap next to me, who was a peculiar, funny fellow, really chatty fellow and humorous, and... he just said to me, he says, "Don't look just now, Wilkie, but there's a bloody great snake right between your knees." When I looked down, there was this great big cobra with its hood open. It was just swinging like that. I've never seen eight men disappear as sharp. I just fell backwards way into the dugout and broke someone's makeshift bed. But we couldn't find the snake after that.
Were there any that you particularly had to be aware of? I mean, snakes?
Scorpions. Now, you would never, ever put any footwear on without inspecting it. My method was to always wedge socks in so that nothing could get down into the toe, because a sting from a scorpion could kill you. It wasn't bound to, but it could. It could make you very ill, though. And then lots of other things, ants and rats. We're plagued with rats down on the Arakan. And I suppose that would be mainly due to all the dead that have been buried in the area.
And you say, how did you deal with them? Or could you deal with them?
Well, now then, in our first position, there was, bordering onto our boundary, was a squadron of Stuart tanks. And there was an officer with them who had a German Dachshund dog. And it was a most friendly dog. And most nights it would come round to our position and it would kill a few rats for us. We would just dig where we thought there was rats and it would catch them as they came out.
Were mosquitoes a problem?
Oh, yes.
And I know we have mentioned the fact that you had to take Mepicrin and so.
That's right.
Were these biting you all the time? What kind? Oh,
yes.
Unpleasant?
Yes. Well, you had to wear... your body had to be pretty well covered, but invariably they'd get onto your hands or around the cuff edges and they would sting and they used to come up in big white blebs. But I suppose the Mepicrin kept it under control.
But extremely painful, I would think.
Well, just for a short time it went off. But we did have some cream to put on that was a repellent. But as we used to say, if the Japs anywhere around, they'll smell us and come to us.